Welcome back to the Crossheart Off-Road Podcast, brought to you by Prime Shape Fitness. Welcome to the Crossheart Off-Road Podcast. This is Mitch talking to you about the week that was, or the last couple weeks in the off-road world, on what I've been working on. I did see that Jeep had some cool things that came out here very recently. You can check out TFL, the fast lane car, whatever they're called. They broke it all down. Jeep has a new package where they have, you can get bigger wheels and tires on a Rubicon, basically what it is, with a lift. And they have some low gear options, a 456, 488s, kind of some crazy stuff that you can get right from the factory. I'm sure that's going to cost the other arm and the leg. So if you guys are ordering some new Jeeps, you might want to wait till that new super duper recon package, whatever it's called, comes out. So that's awesome. But like I said, when we talked about the Bronco a while back when that was coming out, this is going to push Jeep to do bigger things and better things and give you different, more options. Well, here it is. They're doing some aftermarket options right out of the gates for the new Jeep. So that's kind of cool that those are coming out right away. I don't know what those are all going to cost, but I'm guessing, like I said, it's going to be spendy. So that's in the big boy podcast are putting those ones out. But here's the thing that I learned this week. My wife and I just got back from a vacation, and we planned this vacation a while back. I said, I'll be excited to go if I get to rent a Jeep Wrangler. Because I really wanted to, if we're going to go, I might as well rent something cool. So we had that in our mind. And then when it came down to do the trip, this is, you know, there's no cars basically at these car rental places because nobody was traveling. And so my wife went and booked something right away. And I was trying to build up points through a different car company or a rental company. Have a, you know, kind of a, just go to the same person. Eventually you get upgraded. You know, if you go to the same place for a while, try to build up a process of, you know, rentals over time. But she went through with a different company, which is fine. But she did all the stuff and went and got a car. So fast forward a little bit, Daniel, taking off to go. And I said, well, let's just ask, you know, see how much it is to make a change. And we did, and it actually worked out just fine. They said, yeah, you got a decent deal. It was like $120 more for the week for the car, $120 total. She goes, you got a good deal when you came here and or signed up through us. So we use that same discount code for the Jeep. So it ended up not being as bad as we thought it might be. But we went with, we walked into the car rental place. We went to the Grand Canyon, kind of spoil that for myself here. But we went to the Grand Canyon. And we went with Alamo, and here's why I'm going to suggest you go with Avis or Alamo. Avis is my main company that whenever I travel, I use them. That's the first one that came to mind, and they've always been pretty good, and they had a kind of like a plan where if you get going long enough, you get the upgrade for free, that type of deal. Anyhow, so we walked into the car rental place, and there's this huge line wrapped around the building. It had to be 40, 50 people deep. And but that was for a different company altogether, Thrifty or Dollar. But we walked right up to our person, and she goes, yeah, it's always like that. People try to save like $5. And so they go there, and they got these huge lines. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm glad we didn't go with them, because we'd be here for an hour just waiting for a car. And we were in and out in about 10 minutes with this. And they, you know, the last minute I said, hey, you got any Jeep Wranglers? He goes, yes, we do. We got, you know, a few of them. And so you could pick anyone, you know, so once we get all set up, you get to pick anyone you want. So I'm like, okay, cool, pick any Wrangler. So I go out there. There was a Gladiator there also, but my son, he's like, well, we should get that one. But I'm pretty sure that wasn't considered a Wrangler. So I didn't go with that. We had our choice between a Sahara, a Sport, or a Sport convertible, like a top, soft top. So in the end, the Sahara didn't have a keys in it, and it looked like it hadn't been cleaned out yet. So that's why I didn't pick the black Sahara, which would have been nice. The Sport convertible, we were driving a lot, so I didn't want to have any flappage going on or worrying about our stuff inside. So I went with the hard top Sport gray with whopping 245/75 R17s on it. So it didn't have the biggest tires, but you know, that's what you get when you get a rental. You're not really buying it for the rental. You're not really buying it, you know, I guess, let me back up. You don't go on vacation just for the rental, I guess. But this time I kind of did a little bit. So I got into the gray one that we had. It was all cleaned up, ready to go. And thankfully it did have Apple CarPlay with the smallest Apple CarPlay screen I've ever did see in my life. It had a, it wasn't much bigger than my iPhone. It was just a smaller setup. I think it was probably, like, I have an iPhone 12. It was probably just about the size of two iPhone 12. So it's about the size of their screen. So it was just a little guy. But hey, it worked. So I was able to get all my maps in there and make it work for us. So first thing I did is I plugged in with the old cord. It worked just fine, just like my pickup. And like I said, just a smaller screen than I'm used to, which I never thought that I'd be like, screen size would be a big deal, because I know that the newer trucks nowadays have this giant 12-inch screen. The Rams have this monstrosity of a screen. And I think a lot of vehicles and Teslas are that way, and I think that's kind of the way it's going. What I don't like about having the big screen is everything's tied into that screen. And if you want to turn on your heated seats, like in my wife's Grand Cherokee, you have to go through like four different buttons just to turn on the seat, whereas my truck is just one button. I like the idea of just one button for the stuff I want. I don't want to have to go through 15 different prompts just to kind of get what I want. Kind of like when you go to a gas station and ask if you want do you want a receipt? Do you want a car wash? Do you want to sign up for a rewards program? No, I just want gas today. Just give me the gas. I just wish there was a button to kind of circumvent all that in the gas station. I always say every time I get gas and I screwed up sometimes, the cancel and start over. I hate that. But in the end, though, I had a small screen and everything else was kind of around that. So I didn't have heated seats, didn't have all that stuff. We didn't need the heated seats because we were in Arizona, so we were fine there. But it had that stop-to-start feature. And on that note, it only shut off the vehicle one time. It was a really cool day back in Phoenix. And the only one time that ever worked, I'm like, hey, Beth, the stop-start thing, it shut the car off at a stoplight. I couldn't believe it. And it was the first time. I'm used to that with my wife's vehicle. She has a 2017 Grand Cherokee with a 3.6. But this was kind of the first time experiencing it in a Wrangler. So it's kind of an interesting deal there. That only came out, like I said, one time. The rest of the time, the engine stayed running, probably because it was like 110, 112 degrees. We landed in Phoenix. It was just hot all the time. So we used the air conditioner nonstop. It was on set to low nonstop, pushing cold air in, but it wasn't getting too cold in the vehicle because it was so warm. Like I said, there was a sport version, the 2.0, so it's like kind of excited to learn how to use and see what the 2.0 turbo was like. And so I have a lot of impressions on that, and I haven't really decided if I like it or not, but I'll talk about that in a second. First thing I noticed was the gas mileage was popping up on the vehicle. Before I moved, I saw that, and it's about 17 miles to the gallon. I'm like, well, that's not too good. If this is a 2-liter turbo, I thought I'd be getting like, you know, 20, 25, you know, even around town, I thought I'd get better mileage. So it's kind of like, well, why is it so low? And as soon as I started rolling, I realized why, that the vehicle was stuck in four-wheel drive. If you've never been in a Wrangler before, to somebody else, they might look down and see the two things and just pull on the first one to see it. Well, that's the four-wheel drive one, instead of looking at the one that actually has a little Jeep on it, and that's for your 8-speed transmission. So somebody had put it in four-wheel drive, and it's probably been living its first 14,000 miles or part of that in four-wheel drive. And this is in Phoenix, where there's no place to four-wheel drive. So it's funny where that, you know, it was put in four-wheel drive, and nobody figured out how to get it back out. So I wrestled around with it. Obviously, it's not my vehicle, so I didn't know how to get it in and out real easy. And then by the end, I figured it all out because I did get it off-road. But I kind of screwed on enough to get it back into two-wheel drive, and then I started watching the average miles per gallon inch up, which is cool. Now, I was able to reset it down the road later on. Like I said, I was getting 17 miles a gallon before I got it, and then by the end I was averaging per tank right around 26 miles to the gallon because I reset it and I had a trip. But it was mainly that part, well, not gonna lie to you, I was going downhill a lot on that one, coming down from 7,000 feet above sea level, driving straight down into Phoenix, which I think is right around 3 or 4. So it was a lot of downhills at that part. But before that, I was getting 23, 24, 25. But, you know, going, you know, 75 to 85 miles an hour, I was still getting 26 miles a gallon, which is feeling pretty good about that. First impressions of it, the tip-in on when you hit the gas, you know, that's called the tip-in. When you hit it, like in my V8 pickup, you put it at a certain level, it has a kind of linear progression to the acceleration. Like, you know, if you put your foot down this far, it's going to accelerate this much. And it's not going to change, you know, in that, you know, see the pants feeling. Not so much with these turbos. What I've noticed is you put your foot down a little bit, in the first half a second, there's like 100 horsepower. And then all of a sudden, you got 300. And if you turn in a corner, You're not ready for that. It pushes you back and kicks you into another lane altogether. So I think that was driver error, not knowing that piece. They give me my wife's vehicle. It happens to me every now and again where, you know, I push the accelerator down and it kicks down a couple extra gears and boom, it's going faster. Again, she has the same 8-speed transmission with the 3.6. So I drove that thousands of miles. So I had a lot of experience with that type of feeling. But that 2.0, when that turbo kicks in, it's a little different world. So I think that is, as you drive it, you start to learn how to use it and how to, when that's going to come on, how far to push the accelerator down. So I don't think that's a negative on that one. But I think that for me at the first, it took a while, especially because if you're just driving highway miles, you don't notice that. But if you're stopping and starting a lot and taking a lot of corners, you're going to kind of learn that a bit more and be ready for it. So by the end of the whole week I had it, I was feeling better about turning the corner and hitting the accelerator, and knowing I wasn't going to fly all over the place. So I got it, fast forward a bit more. I got it in four-wheel two-wheel drive. Got way better mileage. It's still a little vehicle. I was really surprised that feeling. I've only been in my brother's four-door. I wasn't in his JK for any length of time. So I've only spent a lot of time in my own two doors and friends' two doors. But they are still kind of a narrow vehicle. No surprise. I mean, they're just a two-door stretched out. And they're, smaller than my big pickup. But after a while, it felt okay, though. I felt fine with the space. Plenty of room in the back for our big four luggages and all the stuff we were carrying with us. So I felt good about all, that piece. It goes without saying, you know what you're buying for space when you have a Jeep. But it had enough for us to do this trip and, my sons are getting taller, closer to 6 feet. They felt okay in the back, but I think they liked the front seat better. Who wouldn't? But definitely better in a two-door. Let's put it that way. So that's for space. That's where it went. My favorite part that I had, like I said before, had the Apple CarPlay. I wish it was the bigger screen. I know they have a bigger screen available, but this was just a small CarPlay screen. So if I was buying one, definitely would go for a bigger screen than the base screen. The turbo siren is what I was calling it, because if I was driving around town, I'm like, is there a cop behind me? I kept on looking around, and if you're just on and off the throttle a little bit, it sounds like a siren. So I was worried that there was a cop behind me when I first got it. Then after a while, I started realizing it was the turbo whistling kind of coming on and off if I was going in traffic. Back to the acceleration a little bit. It feels like a two-stroke. So if you guys ever driven a two-stroke motorcycle or ATV, when that power band comes on, it's on. It's 100%. It's going, which made my wife nervous. Every time we're trying to overtake a vehicle and I kind of punched it a little bit, that turbo would kick in. I don't know if it has better acceleration than the 3.6, but it feels like it does, if that makes any sense. Because it sounds like you're driving a rally car, just going up and down a hill, a rally car racing, because it just goes through the gears, shift, before you know it, you're going 85 miles an hour. So it gets up and moving, I thought. I'd love to see the acceleration numbers compared to the 3.6. I think the Wrangler is probably a little bit lighter than my wife's Grand Cherokee, so that's probably a net positive in terms of just overall acceleration. But I tell you what, the vehicle itself just felt like a rocket ship in comparison to my Jeep or even my wife's Jeep. I think that this thing definitely felt faster. Definitely faster than my pickup. A lumbering 6,500-pound vehicle, not going to be as fast as a little Jeep with a little turbo in it. One thing I really enjoyed going up and down the hills was I put the cruise control on, and it would slow you down. So if you're going down a hill, if you have your cruise set at, say, 75 miles an hour, it would keep you at 75. I think I put it in manual mode a couple times to kind of bring it down a little faster, because I wanted to feel like the motor was doing something. I didn't want to feel like I was freewheeling. And I knew it was going to do a good job, but I still kind of shifted down a couple gears so I could feel it a little more, slowing me down. All that together, felt like a good motor. I mean, I'd probably, if I was in the buying market or buying field, I probably would go for the 2-liter. And I think here's my personal feeling is that as these, kind of, I know it gets better mileage. So as this thing, these things come important again and more important, I think the 2-liter might be the only option in the future. That's just me thinking. that in a couple of years they're going to retune that turbo to get 300 horsepower, and this 3.6 liter will just be gone. And that's my thought on that, just because it will have better mileage than the 3.6, more advanced motor, be smaller, lighter, the whole nine yards, and they'll have it just tuned up a little bit. So I just think that's kind of like what the future might hold. After driving one, I'm like, okay, I can see this being a better motor. I haven't driven a 3.6 in a Jeep Wrangler, but I have driven a Grand Cherokee. Not a bad motor at all, but I just think that 2.0 might be what they're thinking for the future. Just my thoughts, you know, just my thoughts on that. So this first segment here, I just wanted to kind of break down my first impressions and kind of some of the driving impressions of that Jeep. We did get to do some off-roading with it, which I'm going to talk about in a bit, but we're going to just take a little break because apparently I have to go cook steaks. My wife has texted me. So talk to you in a minute. And we're back. So here's a word of the wise. If you ever plan on doing something, plan on finishing it. This is about a couple days later than the first part of that segment. The reason why is life just got in the way. So here I am finishing this part of the podcast. Well, I wanted one more touch on the things that I noticed. We went to this Grand Canyon trip, like I talked about, and rented a Jeep. And there is a lot of Jeeps out there, and which is hilarious. The Jeep wave does not exist almost out there. I think I was about one for 10. After a while, I just quit waving because people weren't waving back. Maybe it was people who usually don't drive Jeeps, or maybe people just don't care about the Jeep wave. But I was feeling like, man, you know, nobody's waving back. I just feel like a weirdo just waving at everybody who doesn't wave back. And then somebody waves at me. So then I got back in the habit of waving back. So I know they always talk about the different Jeep waves and all that good stuff. And people do it, people don't do it. Some people don't care. But in the end, though, I was back in the habit of doing it. A lot more Jeep waves here in Minnesota. I took mine out today and got a few Jeep waves out of it. So I just thought it was interesting. A little tidbit of, you know, note there. And I may have mentioned it before, but my brother-in-law went through Moab, and he goes, this is like your heaven, Mitch. They drove their Jeep from North Dakota, and he goes, there's just Jeeps everywhere, mountain bikes everywhere, you got to go. So it's definitely on my list. I know I have somebody who's coming up in the next couple podcasts here who's been there recently for his first time, and we're going to talk to him about his experience. But, you know, I think he'd break your arm if you waved all the Jeeps there. So I can't wait to go. So that's just a little note about Grand Canyon. You'll see plenty of Jeeps there, in other words. So kind of moving forward with the podcast, one other thing I wanted to bring up was the number of RVs I saw out there. A lot of people like RVs, and I was very critical of RVs early on. And then by day two, I'm going, maybe RVs are cool. Mainly because we were spending each day between $250 and $300 bucks a day on food alone. And it was getting pretty much like, should we go out to eat or just, you know, not. It was just crazy how much things cost when, well, we had our two boys with us and my wife and I, and it was just, and I just think things are expensive when you're on vacation, because if you're at a tourist trap, it's going to cost you money. So I think that if we had an RV and go into these different RV things, I think it'll be a lot cheaper to stay at a campsite for RVs and then make your own food right inside the vehicle. I think that would have been way cheaper. We had McDonald's, I think it was $45 for us. So it was crazy. And then even my sons were like, that's too expensive, Dad. Don't get that. Which I'm glad they think that. But I think by the second or third day, I was going to the gas station and getting some breakfast cereal bars for them and some milk. And then I was getting my coffee and whatever egg sandwich I could find at McDonald's that was half healthy, because they didn't care. And that's what I wanted was, you know, half price. So it ended up working out just fine. It's just, this is me complaining a little bit about high prices on vacations, but that's what dads do. But the RVs, I thought that seemed like a cool way to go. Some of the RVs were just overkill, just monstrous RVs pulling a Jeep behind them or whatever car. And I always, you know, classic dad joke, I said, boy, that Jeep is working hard to push that RV up the hill. Every time I saw one, I made that comment. But in the end, those RVs are pretty amazing. I think if I did it, I'd do a modestly sized one, which means just the van version. I think that's all you need. If you're just going to sleep in there and not live in it, I think that's all you might need.
I think my buddy Wade has his built out to stand for a couple, few days at a time, maybe do a little cooking in around the campfire or whatever. That might be the way to go. Like I said, a lot of these forest fires were wreaking havoc even on something like that. I think you had to use a lot of propane and not any open fires for your any of your cooking. And that's my next subject is the forest fires. And the only radio station that came in while we were out there was the radio station, kind of like the travel channel. And every other word was 9 out of 10 fire, forest fires are preventable, that type of deal, as they had forest fires all around there. And place was very smoky. On our trip back, we opened a door to get some coffee at one little side shop, and boy, you could smell that coffee, or that coffee, you could smell that forest fire was real close wherever we were. And but the smoke was everywhere in Arizona. They're hoping for rain. I think they got some the day we left. But I hope they got what we got here recently. So this is Sunday evening, the 27th, and boy, it definitely rained the last couple days here. Hopefully, you got rain where you're at listening here. But the rain we needed here was pales in comparison to the rain that Arizona needed. Holy cow, they're dry as you could get. Dangerously dry. Obviously, they had a lot of forest fires. And that's my next subject. We had things planned. So we were actually in the Jeep, and my brother-in-law and his wife were in another Jeep, actually, right behind us. And his wife does all the driving, and so he was on his phone just checking out where we're going. We were going to go to the Slide Rock, which is like a natural water slide, was our plan. The boys were real excited for it. They have two boys also. They were really excited for this. There's some cliff jumping, so some cool places to go. There's some natural stuff. And it's like $20 a carload. So we're like, okay, we're going to drive for an hour, hour and a half, do some cheap stuff, and drive back. It's hot as heck out. This is our day. Whatever. We'll drive during the, in the right away in the morning, play in the sun and this water in the hottest part of the day, and then drive home. That was our plan. Great plan. Well, the forest fire had a different idea. So the National Forest Service has a bunch of natural forests out there. The forests here look way different than the forests there. The forests there are basically cactuses and brush, but they're protected lands and all that, and that's where the fires start. There's also some great pine forests too, but mainly where we're at was the smaller pine. Anyhow, so we're driving towards Sedona or Williams or whatever part of Arizona, and my brother-in-law texts us. He goes, "Hey, that place we're driving to currently is closed." So we pulled up beside the road and like, well, plan B. What's our plan? Which was funny because we were just like, I don't know what we're gonna do now. And we had something else planned for the next day in another national forest. And they're like, I'm like, I bet we get a call that that's canceled too. And sure enough, they called us while we were driving back. That was canceled too. So we drove back to the hotel, jumped in the pool for a few hours, and just kind of made a day of it in the pool, which was the tiniest pool for 10 people that you can imagine. But we were the only 10 people that were using it at the time. So if you're gonna have to be stuck at a hotel pool, it's cool to have exclusive use of it. But what we had planned was something my wife wanted to do for a while. She wanted to do some horseback riding. And that was planned for what would be the Wednesday of last week. And this was already Tuesday. We're standing there going like, well, everything's closing up. And I think, I don't know if it was me or somebody made a suggestion, maybe we can move the horseback ride into today. Kind of threw it out there. And a few hours go by, and we found out that we could. We did move it to that same day, which is great. In the meantime, I went and stood in front of from a big rack of brochures that had about 50, 60 brochures in it. And I'm like, what could we do? What could we do today? And I'm staring at this rack of brochures trying to figure out something to do. And because the forest fire had just like claimed our idea for that day and claimed our idea for the next day, and we already been in the Grand Canyon 3 times. So fast forward a little bit, we got the call back that we could go that day. So sure enough, we all jumped back into the Jeep at 2 o'clock. We like to be early. That's something you should know. With you, if you're the same way, we had to be there by 2:30. I think we left at 1:45. We're there by 2, and so we were a full 30 minutes early to fill up paperwork and pay money and all that good stuff. To do the horse ride. So, a few things about horses. I grew up on a farm, but I've been on more camels and elephants than I've ever been on a horse. So I've ridden camels and elephants with my kids, when I was a kid. But I think I was only on a horse or a pony one time in my life. I loved horses, My family had horses before I was born. My dad used to break horses. My dad was basically a straight-up cowboy when he was younger. He used to break horses and get paid to do it. He had horses. He rode horses all his life. His dad had horses. But with the advent of a truck or an ATV, kind of don't need to feed a horse. So he's like, and he was, he, by the time I was born, he was already in his mid-30s, so he's like, well, I don't need to wrestle a horse anymore. So I never really had a horse. My older siblings rode horse. My mom and dad rode horse a bunch when they were younger. But again, not me. So fast forward a little bit to, we're about ready to get these horses. And one thing you do need to know if you're going to, you know, get on a trail ride is they weigh you. And I was a little worried. I'm a big fella. I'm around 240. And so I was like, well, what's the cutoff? You know, what's the max you can be? And apparently I was under it, so I was fine. I felt okay about that. They brought out, there was 10 in our group, or 9 in our group, I think. Wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, 7 in our group. My older son didn't come with, it was my younger boy, my wife and I, and then my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law and their two kids. And so we had our group, and then there was another group of 3 people. So our total, it was that many. And then a couple wranglers, which is the horse guides. I'll call them wranglers for this because this is an off-road podcast, so I'm going to call them wranglers. So I posted about it on my Instagram and Facebook pages. You can see that. But I talked about how I made the comment, these are 1 horsepower. We were in 4 low the whole time. And we were. We went very slow. But so we weighed in, like I said. And then they bring these horses. And they start, you know, pulling people out of the crowd. And I was pretty excited because I do wear cowboy boots every now and again, especially in the wintertime. But my cowboy boots have never been in a stirrup in their entire life, neither have I. And so sure enough, I brought them with so I could, you know, I could be a real cowboy. I was pretty excited about this part. So they bring out the horses, and you know, they have, you know what a quarter horse is. Mine was a 3/4 ton horse. My horse was massive. It was a big fella. And his name was Tonic, and he was awesome. But they brought these horses out, and the last 3 they brought out with these just monstrosities, these big old boys. And the few people with us, you know, there was 2 other big people, and they got one that was part Clydesdale, I think. And then my big old horse, yeah, I think he was the tallest one there. And for some reason, because I had cowboy boots on, I think they thought I was a real cowboy. So they stuck me in the back of the group. I was the tail end of this whole horse parade. And my son was right in front of me with his horse, and my horse was the most impatient horse there. He was trying to pass Mason's horse the whole time. He was, you know, taking his head and hitting it into the other one, the rump, trying to get it to move. And at one point we stopped, and I asked the wrangler, I go, my horse is kind of like, he wants to get moving. He goes, yeah, you got the impatient one. He's always wanting the ride to be over with. So I thought that was funny. I'm like, I don't know why they stuck me in the back, but they gave me the most impatient horse. Then my nephew, he had the most patient horse. Like, he was like, my wife would love this horse because my wife is very skittish on the roads, and she's always talking about, you know, giving your distance and not tailgating. And my horse was missed a tailgate, and my nephew's horse left like 6 horse lengths before the horse in front of him. So I got a kick out of that my horse was super impatient. My wife's horse was perfect, just for her, very timid and quiet. And my horse was making racket and, you know, bumping the horse in front of him and trying to pass him, and kept having to pull back on his reins. And mind you, that my son is right in front of me, so obviously I don't want to hurt him, and my horse is being all rambunctious and being crazy. And then plus, I'm about a foot higher than even my son is. You know, my son's almost the same height as I am, and I'm a foot and a half higher than he is. So I got this just huge horse that I'm sitting on at this time. But I did realize too, you know, my day job, I'm a personal trainer. And what I thought was interesting, my watch kept on asking me, do you want to start exercising? It looks like you're on a elliptical. Do you want to start a workout? And it asked me a couple times, so finally I just hit, yeah, sure, why not? My heart rate was at 115 while I was just riding this horse. And when you ride a horse, you're not really just sitting on a horse. You actually have a little bit of your weight in your stirrups. You're actually kind of almost standing, a quarter standing and 3/4 sitting when you're on there. Didn't realize that until the guy said it. And then the whole time I'm going, my heart, like I said, was 115. I burned, you know, we went for an hour and 20 minutes, and I burned a bunch of calories. I tracked it. I'm like, holy cow, this is a workout. Maybe because I was nervous, but I mainly think it's because I was kind of bouncing around and sitting in the saddle. And to prove a point, the 2 wranglers that was with us, that were kind of the trail guides for this trip. They were about 5'10 and 135 pounds. These guys were string beans. You know, to call them slim would be not even close to accurate. They're slim and ultra slim. These two dudes. So I'm like, man, that's a might be a great weight loss plan is to switch your job to be a horse wrangler, because these dudes were very, very lean, and they were relaxed in the saddle as you could possibly be compared to me, which was I was a little worried because, like I said, never been that high up in a vehicle. It's like riding a mountain bike 10 feet in the air. You're just way up there, it felt like. But these horses went up and down hills, no problem. It gave me an utmost respect for a horse and the animal, what it can do. I already had a lot of respect for them. I studied horses in the past for when I watched Secretariat. I think I actually was on Wikipedia the whole time reading about it. And like a horse heart can weigh 22 pounds. They're massive. Their heart rate can go from right around 20 beats per minute to well over 200, which is just an amazing range. They're an amazing animal. You know, they're fast, obviously, runs like a horse. You know all the sayings. But boy, it was an amazing animal beyond. My guy, don't know how old he was, but boy, he was a big fella and carried me around like he was nothing. He did complain a few times, to be honest with you. He was talking to some other horses, and which I thought was hilarious, them making a bunch of racket. But that was a horse ride. That was the highlight of the trip besides the Grand Canyon itself was, I think, just going out there and doing that and getting out in nature. And I took a limited number of pictures because I didn't want to drop my phone and have a horse step on it or just lose the phone. Another reason I didn't take too many pictures of the Grand Canyon because I didn't want to lose my phone. I saw plenty of phones sitting down on the ledge, and there's people we were talking to, the park ranger says, yeah, we get calls all the time about people losing their phone till all the way, they go all the way to the bottom. And I'm like, well, that's no fun to lose your phone at the Grand Canyon. But I said I just kind of left it alone. So that was kind of the horse part of the trip. All went just fine. Got a nice picture. You can look at it online. Then, you know, everything kind of went okay on the way home. Kind of had a day just in Phoenix. My wife and I went out to the hotel and just went down to the bar. Went out and saw my nephew, saw my niece and her husband and their child. Saw, like I said, my nephew and his wife. It was a good time down in Arizona to see some family down there. You know, then I get home and take my first trip on Friday with my pickup. And right away I realized, I go, this AC is not blowing as cold as the rental was. So it's kind of fun jumping into almost a brand new vehicle, especially down in Arizona when the AC is working perfectly. And it was set to low the entire time. The AC is blaring at you, so it's barely keeping up, to be honest with you. It was getting it down about 70 degrees, and that was about it. When it was 117 outside in Sedona, I think, at the hottest we had. So I get home, and my AC, I was just using the max air right before I left. I came to the realization that you shouldn't be using max air the whole time to try to get your truck to cool down. So it was blowing basically coolish to warm air on, was it Friday? So I called the old dealership. They couldn't get me in until next Friday. So then I called the local car shop in town. I've had good luck with them in the past at the old place in Richfield. So they had one in Eden Prairie. So I called the guy up. He goes, yeah, come anytime. You know, they're packed at the dealership, and these guys were wide open. So I walked right in, and the guy goes, yeah, we'll take a look at it. It costs you $150 for us to put new gas in it. It's probably what it is. And we'll put some dye in there and to kind of fix it up. And to see, you know, if it does leak out of there, we'll know exactly where it's coming from. So I'm like, yeah, go ahead. And it took a lot longer than I thought it would take. You know, it took a good 40 minutes to kind of, you know, door to door to get out of there. But in the end, it blows ice cold air now. So, and if it leaks, there's dye in that. Get whatever gas they use to coolant to put in there. So now we'll see if there's more of an issue. But that's something fun to come home to after you spend a bunch of money on a trip and do all the stuff, to come home to something's wrong with your vehicle. Your daily driver. So, but now that AC is back up and running in a pickup, can't be happier. Happy it's working out for us. So in the end, that's my story with the truck. That was my big thing for the week. I came home, you know, classic Crossred. You come home, start driving your truck that's been sitting for a week, doing nothing, and all of a sudden doesn't work. Something doesn't work in it. And that was my AC. But it's working now for $146.73. So there you go. That's kind of my recap of the trip. If you haven't been on a horse ride, I definitely suggest it. It's, you know, we did the guided tour deal, way cheaper than owning a horse, I believe. And if you do it every now and again, it was pretty fun. Just like renting a Jeep, you know, didn't have to buy a new Jeep to get that new Jeep experience. Kind of got a good idea of how they drive, what they're like. And so yeah, it was a fun trip. So I definitely suggest, if you know, want to go see the seven wonders of the natural world, Grand Canyon is right there. It's a big hole in the ground, but it's pretty damn cool. Well, thanks for listening to the Crossroad Off-Road Podcast, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening to the Crossroad Off-Road Podcast, brought to you by Prime Shape Fitness, your one-stop shop for your fitness needs.